Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program. I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Small things can make a big difference. Can a ball of yarn or several balls of yarn help us to respond to a negative and divisive world? We are going to talk to two people who are going to help us answer that question in the second segment. Before that, there's an equally interesting question. Can a few club chairs and a sofa help women who are abused during an interview with police? It may sound trivial, but the facts speak for themselves. So let's get started. Unless you've been through it, understanding the terror and pain of domestic abuse is not easy to fully appreciate what someone's experiencing. As we learned last week when I interviewed Nancy Johnson, Executive Director of Cornerstone Women's Shelter, there are some 2,600 women and children who seek help from their services. In many cases, these women have faced violence in the home. The first responders to these cases of domestic violence are the police. During such cases, interviewing the victims of violence, rape, or sexual assault can be very hard. This past week, Cornerstone and the Coburg Police found an innovative approach to addressing the issues around police interviews with victims of violence. Here to talk about this project is Sergeant Brent Allison of the Coburg Police Force. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for having me here, Robert. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Can you describe what it's like when you are a police officer and you are at a scene of domestic violence and you have to talk to someone who's been brutalized in order to get a statement?
For sure, Rob. And what we have to consider here is we're dealing with people who this is probably the most singular, difficult event in their lives. This thing has affected them in more ways than we can even comprehend. So what we've got to do is consider that they're going through significant trauma. We've got to make sure that we can reduce the trauma that they're going through, and we also have to get the details of what happened. We have to make sure that they're protected, that their family's protected, and we have to make sure that we get our facts and issues out. But our foremost concern is that these people get all the services that they need and that they're protected accordingly.
How often do officers get calls to an incident of domestic violence?
Sure, Rob. So what I've done is I've got the stats from last year, 2018, and according to our statistics, we had 181 domestic calls. And to put that into perspective, overall we've had 10,362 calls for service, and domestic calls are one of our highest number of calls that we attend to. And again, to put that into perspective, we'll have about 134 theft from motor vehicles. We'll have 213 assaults, of which a lot of these domestic calls are lumped in with. So it's one of our highest number of calls that we receive.
Now, when you get a call, what's the difference between, say, a call and something that turns into an investigation? Because I know that's a critical tipping point for these kinds of things. You'll get a call, but you'll go out, but nobody will lay charges or nobody will follow through. So how does it work when you go out to a call like that? And how many of those calls actually end up being investigations and charges being laid? Do we have any idea of how that goes?
Yeah, absolutely. So our men and women at the Coburg Police Service, they're highly trained in recognizing signs of abuse, signs of assault. So we get a lot of domestic calls, but some of those calls are argumentative. Somebody is upset about something, be it financial or what. And what we do is we'll separate those individuals. We'll speak to them different areas as long as the officers can see each other. And we'll determine, one of our first things is, were you hurt? Were you assaulted? Do you have injuries? Were the children assaulted? Did the children witness what happened? And we'll make a determination of if an assault occurred, then we're going to charge somebody and put them on conditions not to be near the victim or survivor. And we'll also incorporate Children's Aid Society. We'll bring in Cornerstone Family Services to assist our victims. And statistically, it's probably not as high as you would think. In the 181 calls, we don't have direct statistics of how many of those people were charged. It'll probably be less less than 10%, so under 18 for the year.
Now, part of this project that we're going to talk about today involves rape and sexual assault. Do you have any idea, do your numbers break down into those kinds of things, or are they grouped as something different?
Oh, they actually are grouped. So we have last year approximately 30 sexual assault occurrences, and of those 30, 19 were dealt with via charges or other ways. So either they were found unfounded or that they didn't occur. So in a total, it would be 30 for last year, and that's pretty consistent year to year. Sometimes it'll be a little less, sometimes it'll be higher.
Now, this past week, there was an announcement about something called a safe space or a soft interview room. Can you tell us what that's about?
Definitely. And what we use for this, it's a trauma-based approach. Again, like I had mentioned, a sexual assault survivor, it's one of the worst things that somebody can experience. So they've got to bring the courage up to call the police. They have to have police attend their location, and they have to go to the police station to report this incident. And so what we've done with our partners in Cornerstone is we've developed a room that is calming. It kind of looks a lot like your own living room. There's pictures on the wall. And we know that people have a certain physiological response in the environment they're put in. And traditionally in policing, we didn't have that soft interview approach room. We sort of had a couple of chairs. We were concerned more about the equipment, the recording devices, and getting that information. But right now what we have is a soft room. They can sit down, be calm, as calm as you can be in this situation. And that's where we try to engage with our victim and get the information.
So, for people who aren't familiar with how officers go about an interview process, can you tell us a bit about it? Because oftentimes we see on television or we see through the media the sort of the more interrogation type style of interviews.
For sure, yeah.
Can you tell us how an interview of an interrogation versus the kinds of interviews you're doing with these people in these situations?
Absolutely. And again, it's based on trauma. So we take into consideration that sometimes this person is going to have to repeat their story again and again. We want to limit that. We want to make sure that the story is told once. We want to make sure we get all the facts so that our victim and survivor doesn't have to go through this again and again. They don't have to tell the story, because when they do that, they themselves are re-victimized. They're experiencing events that happen. We don't want that to occur. So our officers who interview survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence and gender violence are trained in this. They're trained to recognize certain signs, and they know that they have to have this one chance to get all of the details across, and we don't want to re-victimize our people again.
So where is this room located within the police station?
Currently the room is located upstairs in our old interview room area. So we have a main room that, like we said, is soft, and a room aside where all our recording equipment is kept. So nobody has to see the cameras. They don't have to see somebody else taking notes. They're in this comfortable setting, and they're just one-on-one speaking to the officer who's doing the interview.
All right. Chief Vandergraaf was talking about this, and it was quoted in a story saying that the evidence-based practices call for a trauma-informed approach to reports of rape and sexual assault, and soft interview room is considered an integral component of this. We want to ensure we are resourced adequately for the community can receive appropriate support during this vulnerable time. So you've talked a little bit about the trauma-informed approach. Can you unpack that a little bit more for us so that people who maybe don't know a lot about psychology or the psychology of rape and sexual assault and domestic violence, can you help us better understand what that means?
Absolutely. In the past, what we would do is, and you would see it on some of the programs you were talking about, we need the facts about this. We need to know what happened. We need to know where it happened. And they would kind of go in circles and go back to the event. What we need to do now is we need to sort of drill down on what the event was as quickly as possible, get the information out, and make sure that we have that information for court purposes, but again, we're not re-traumatizing this person. It's again, okay, we understand this event happened. We're not going to continually go back to this very traumatizing event and ask our survivor, okay, let's go back into this again. We need to get the details out in that one instance. Then we need to make sure that our victim and survivor gets the help that they need. They get social services. We have that through Cornerstone, and we have to get that as soon as possible after this event.
Okay. Now, though, part of your responsibility, though, is you've got to be helping to build a case so that go to court and justice can be served. How do you balance your need to get details in order to get the charges laid and to be successful in court apart versus this idea that we don't want to push the victim too hard in an interview situation so that we re-traumatize them? How does that happen?
That's a great question, Robin. It's just developing that fine line, and based on the experience of our investigators, they're going to know what they need. They're going to know what our Crown attorneys are going to need for all the facts and issues, and they're going to know what areas they're going to have to touch on to get that. But again, they also have to take in consideration what our survivors experience, what they're going through. The Crowns know this, and we know that we're not going to get there. We're not going to demonize anybody. We're just going to get the facts and quickly as we can and move on from there.
Do you have particular officers that are trained specifically for this purpose?
We do. We have several officers in our service who have gone to the Ontario Police College. They've taken the Sexual Assault Investigators course. They've also taken training. Lori Haskell was brought down earlier this year with our partnership in Cornerstone to have training on trauma-based interviews. So we have officers who have extensive training in this area.
Is it important the gender of the officer doing the interview?
It's not always important. We like to take in, again, the consideration from our victims. If they're comfortable talking to a man, if they're comfortable talking to a woman, then if possible, we want to make sure that happens. Sometimes that doesn't always take place, but we make every consideration a possibility to make sure that does happen.
Now, Nancy Johnson, the executive director of Cornerstone, has said in the media that the gender-based violence, I'm quoting here, gender-based violence, especially sexual assaults, goes largely unreported, and we want to empower those impacted to feel comfortable coming forward and to improve what historically has been a challenging experience with the criminal justice system. Implied in that is the fact that cases go unreported. How is what you're doing with the soft interview room or the safe space, how is that going to potentially increase the ability of women to, or those, sorry, not just women, but anyone who's been sexually assaulted or raped or suffering domestic violence coming forward?
Mm-hmm, for sure. And again, what we want to do, it's basically a holistic approach. That room is a very big part of it. Other part of it is our Violence Against Women program that we have with Cornerstone. They go through all our processes. They contact people who they think could benefit from their services. And they are also a conduit to speaking to victims to say, hey, listen, the police have this area. We work with the Cobourg Police Service. We've developed this room in partnership with them. They're going to consider everything that you've gone through. They're going to be there for you as well, and they're going to be there to help. So it's that partnership that's very important.
But just as an aside, I mean, did you talk to any other police forces in putting this together? First of all, did you talk to anybody? That's one question at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. What we would do is we would consult with other services to see what they've done. We run a project, but our partners in Cornerstone also, they know the trauma-based thing probably better than we do, and we would consult with them. They help pick the furniture out for us. They help design it, and they just help make it a safe place. So we would go to other services, Rob.
So the second part of the question, which I wanted to ask, which I think is more pointed, is you know, have other police forces found a difference? In other words, have more people come forward? Have they been more successful in building their cases? Has there been a positive result in doing this?
For sure. I can't really speak to other police services across the country or Ontario, but for us, I know through working with Cornerstone that they have reached out to victims. They have had them engage more with police. They've had them engage more with their services, and we have seen an uptick in reported services to us.
Now, the collaboration between Cornerstone and the Cobourg Police Service is not new. I know there's something called the Violence Against Women Response Enhancement Project that was launched in April of 2017, and that was a major step forward in your relationship with Cornerstone. Can you tell us about that project and how the Safe Interview Room is part of it?
Absolutely. Again, like you said, that project developed in April of 2017, and what it is we want people who have expertise in domestic violence, gender violence, sexual assault, to look at our files. And they don't look at our files from a point of, Cobourg Police, you made a mistake there. They look at it a holistic approach to say, we can reach out and contact these people, whereas before you would simply refer them to us. So what they do now is they'll review all of our files related to domestic violence. They'll reach out to our survivors and victims in that area, and they'll say, hey, we're Cornerstone. We're acting on behalf of the Cobourg Police Service. What can we do for you? And they've got parameters set in place where they know certain times they can't contact a victim on this number, and they have steps where they can actually reach out and contact these people. And for us, it's important to know that we want these people to have services first. Charges can be coming later or not at all, but we need to have people in a community know that they're the victim, they're in charge, what they want goes.
How is that different than you turning around and phoning them up and just saying, mm-hmm. hey, we just had a domestic assault, can you come down and talk to this person?
Absolutely. And it, we have mandates where, okay, this has happened, we're mandated to call Cornerstone, let's reach out to them. But Cornerstone also looks at things beyond domestic assault. They'll look at probation charges or breaches where perhaps something may have missed. So they're going to grab onto that and say, just a minute, this person's had contact or their children have had contact with this other person, and that's in their domain. They're going to reach out. They're going to make that call. And it comes a little bit differently when you get the response, oh, hey, I'm a police officer. I'm in this uniform. Here's a card for somebody to contact. It's a little bit different when Cornerstone does it. They have a different approach. They're experts in this field. They know how to do this best. So it's more important to have that direct contact to get services involved.
Both these things are part of also a larger arc. I know that back in the summertime, Coburg first responders were involved, which included yourselves, in the She Could Be campaign.
Yes.
Talk a bit about that and how that fits into this overarching partnership that you have with Cornerstone.
Absolutely. And these type of things like She Could Be, all the other services that we've got, have come and blossomed from our partnership with Cornerstone and all of our other partnerships we have in the community. Because we started this project. And what it does is it allows us to communicate differently. Normally, they would communicate with another community agency. That would be fine. But now that we have these relationships with Cornerstone, Jane Lang, Nancy Johnson know me. They know that they can reach out to me. We have a trust developed where they can ask me things where before they'd be like, I don't know if I could tell the police this or I don't know what would happen. But now what happens is they reach out to me directly or to Chief Vandegraaff and they say, here's what we have. Let's kind of brainstorm and see where we can go. And what we've done is we've developed the program that you mentioned, Stand Up, Stay Strong in Schools. We have that. And we've got a lot of new exciting things that are sort of in the hopper that we can't really talk about now, but we're going to have some great things for this community moving forward.
I also understand, too, that the police have a seat on the board at Cornerstone.
Yes, that's true, yes.
So what was the cost of the taxpayers for this room?
I'm not sure the entire price of the room. I didn't bring that stats in. But what we did is we bought a couch. It's nothing extravagant. We bought a table, two chairs, and probably some paintings that aren't going to cost you more than $500 to $1,000. But again, I don't have the actual stats for you on that, Rob.
Okay. We've talked a lot about the difference that this makes to victims, but not a lot about the impact on officers. How does this impact the culture and the approach of officers as they do their investigation?
Definitely. And again, I mentioned that Dr. Haskell came in with our officer to speak about trauma-based interviews. So what we're developing with all our officers is that we have to realize the victim first, as opposed to we have to go out there and charge somebody. And again, it's sort of ingrained in our DNA. That's what we do. Somebody did something bad. We need to get that person to bring them to justice. What this approach is we have to consider the totality of the situation. We have to consider our survivor and victim, what their situation is going to look like, how to get them help. And we sort of factor in all the things about approaching things with the accused person and going from there. But it really kind of brings in the totality of our officers noticing we have a victim here who's a person. We have to take that into consideration and move on to our accused person and getting charges laid as well.
How does this impact the community? I'm thinking in terms of, you know, the way we've talked about it for the last little while, you know, we're talking about more reports, more investigations, more charges, and hopefully we'll get some numbers, I guess, in a year's time to see how about convictions. Mm-hmm. What message does that send out to the community at large?
We want to let our community know that we're here for you. Like you said, all of these incidents are vastly unreported with sexual assault, with gender-based violence. We want the community to know that we have a strong partnership with Cornerstone. We're there for our community. If you need help, we need you to stand up, be that person for yourself, reach out, get a hold of somebody, and get the help that you need, and we're going to be there for you.
Well, I also note, too, I mean, when you look at the sexual assault case of the former artistic director for the Capitol Theater, and, you know, that's caused a lot more talk in our community about sexual harassment in the workplace,
mm-hmm,
for example.
Definitely.
Do you think the same will happen regarding sexual assaults, rapes, and domestic violence because of this initiative that you've taken?
I think so. We want people to know that to be comfortable. And again, this is the most horrific, the most horrendous thing that could actually happen to somebody. We want to know that you're a survivor of this. We want you to help you move on. We want to make sure we get a wraparound approach to make sure you get all the services that you need, and you're not alone. There's a lot of people out there who are going to help you. You're not alone.
Because I also wonder, too, I mean, you know, the whole justice system depends on this interview.
Yes.
I mean, when you really think about it, and I guess mm-hmm. that was sort of in my introduction, I was, you know, small things that have big impact.
Absolutely, yes.
But, I mean, to have that information, that people will step forward more often, hopefully, that there are more convictions, and then hopefully a message goes out to the community that says, you know, we're seeing justice in our community.
Definitely.
Now for these people who in the past may not have always found justice.
Absolutely.
Or felt afraid to come forward because they wouldn't get treated fairly in the process.
Definitely, Rob. I mean, that you're right, that interview, it's the key. We want to make those interviews perfect, because when they go to court, we want that interview to stand on its own, to represent what happened, to represent what we should do moving forward, and just to have it stand alone, make it perfect so it can't get ripped apart and our victim and survivor can't be demonized in any way.
Okay, you've tantalized me now with you. Things are coming up. So my last question is always, what's next? And I'm just curious, is there anything you could tease us with in terms of going forward in terms of in this particular area that you can share with us now, or things that are coming up with the Coburg Police?
Absolutely. And again, we talked about trauma. And what we have and what we see a lot of is our main center for sexual assault response is Peterborough. Our victim and survivors have to go to Peterborough to get that assistance. We want to make sure that they don't have to go that far. We want to make sure that we have something in place. We have all the wraparound services to help our victims and survivors in our community. And we need our community to work with us on this. We need to make sure that people don't have to travel great distances because it's a barrier. And we want to make sure all those services happen here.
This is one of my favorite hobby horses. Now that you mentioned it, I'm gonna ask this. Do we have a rape kit at the Coburg Hospital yet, or do you still have to go to Peterborough to get it?
The sexual assault nurses are in Peterborough, so we have to go there. Our survivors and victims can go to Emerge, make sure everything's okay, but the actual clinical aspect is in Peterborough. It's excellent people. They do a great job, but again, it is a barrier for people to try to return there to get further help, and we want to help reduce that barrier and be there for our victims.
Well, good luck with all
Thank
of
you,
that.
Thank you, sir. Thanks, Rob.
Really appreciate you coming in, Brent, and it's good to know that small things can make a big difference. I want to thank my first guest today, Brent Allison of the Coburg Police. When we return, Megan Damon, coordinator of the Halliburton Kawartha Lakes Northumberland Drug Strategy, and David Sheffield, community director of Greenwood Coalition, will be joining me. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back.